And welcome back. It's Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. It's been said of life that none of us gets out of here alive. Given that, why is it so hard for so many of us to talk about the end of life? That's one of the big questions in Roz Chast's new memoir about her elderly parents at the end of their lives.
Roz Chast is the brilliant cartoonist for The New Yorker, who draws and writes about our collective angst, fears, and nightmares, always in a way that's full of wit and wisdom. Her work is hilariously funny, but also poignant and deep.
And that's true of her new memoir, which tells the story through words and drawings about the life and death of her parents, who were married for almost 70 years, and about her own complicated efforts and emotions as she cared for them.
Anthony spoke with Chast this past spring about her book, Can't We Talk About Something More Pleasant, which recently won the New England Book Award for Nonfiction. And she recalled when she realized her parents needed her help. It was after she was drawn back to Brooklyn for a visit.
Which was this sort of out-of-the-blue feeling. And I remember the date because it was 2 days before the World Trade Centers were hit. It was very easy to remember, September 9th. It was a Sunday, 2001. And I had this extremely strong feeling that I needed to see them in their natural environment. Hmm. And I hadn't for 10 or 11 years before that.
Why'd you stay away for all those years?
A lot of different reasons. I had moved to Connecticut. I had two young children. I was working. I saw them. They would come up to visit me. They would, at the beginning, my mother drove because my father never learned how to drive. So they would drive up from Brooklyn. Then eventually I just said, I don't want you driving anymore. You have to take car service. We had a lot of fights about that. But then they would come up by car service. So there were certain, I guess, more, you know, on the surface reasons. But also, I did not like Brooklyn. I didn't. I had no desire to go back to that building, to that apartment, to see where I just did not want to.
Hmm. Well, when you did go back, you made an effort to have the conversation, which is where this wonderful memoir begins. And you wanted to talk to them about sort of what they wanted at the end of their lives. And this conversation didn't go well, and this is where the book begins. And I'm wondering if you could read just from the first couple of pages, which shows you sitting down with your parents attempting to have the conversation.
Okay. It starts out with me, and I say, so do you guys ever think about things? And my father goes, what kind of things? And I say, you know, things. Plans. And my parents are just like mystified. They're looking at each other. And I say, I have no idea what you guys want. Let's say something happened. Am I the only sane person here? And they're like making signs to each other, like, you know, the sort of universal symbol for this person is nuts, where like the person like twirls their finger at their temple, or my father makes the sort of sad violin sort of face. You know what? And then finally I say to them, you know what? Forget it. Never mind. Que sera, sera. And later that same day, I'm back at home and I go, phew. And my father and my mother are back and they're at home and they're going, phew. And phew. Part of this was this cartoon, this did not happen exactly like this. This is a sort of compression of many times that I tried to start conversations. Mm-hmm. But I was as complicit in it as they were in avoiding.
In other words, you didn't just really come out and say it.
No, I did not come out and say it.
I need to talk to you about what you want at the end of your life.
No, yeah. No. Right. I mean, we all wanted to avoid it.
Yeah. And then you say on the next page, it was against my parents' principles to talk about death.
Yes.
Why? What principles?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, it was like with my mother, especially, I think she believed that if you talked about it, that was as much as saying, come on in. And my father just didn't, you know, he just found it sort of like, he was already a very anxious person, and talking about that made him feel even more anxious. So that was his reason. But no, it was just against, you know, why when you're alive would you want to talk about this horrible thing?
Right.
I wrote, it was against my parents' principles to talk about death, nor would they discuss religion beyond a most superficial level. This is my mother saying to me, I'm a little girl in this in this panel. I'm Jewish, daddy is Jewish, you're Jewish, end of story.
That's as far as the religious,
yes.
The religious conversation went.
Yes, and asking too many spiritual, quote-unquote, questions meant that you had too much time on your hands. And my mother's idea, you know, when people would be like, you know, looking for something, you know, spiritual answers, she would go, pure navel gazing. You know, she just did not respect that.
She didn't. So this wasn't a conversation that was going to gain steam.
No.
But then you're forced in a big way to confront sort of the end with them. At age 93, your mother falls down. Your father couldn't pick her up. And he left the apartment to find a neighbor and somehow got lost in the building. And at that point, even they have to admit that it was time to make some changes. So describe a little bit about what happens next in their life.
At that point, we did, the three of us, I mean, I was at that point going out to see them fairly, somewhat frequently. Once a week, once every 2 weeks, something like that. And they agreed to go to tour the facilities at some place in Brooklyn that a friend of theirs was at. And I went with them. And first of all, they hadn't gone out of the apartment in months. My mother had been in the hospital, and she was very weak. And my father didn't go out much either. He would go downstairs to the lobby to check the mail. So this was a big excursion. And I have my own issues with driving, which I'm not going to go into here. But it was like we had this sort of jalopy car service that they used. So getting my parents into their coats, into their outer garments, it was like worse than dressing a toddler. And then having to bring them downstairs and then taking them. By the time we got to this facility, my mother was so exhausted that she looked like she was going to drop dead. And she did sort of like almost pass out on her friend's bed. And then the nurse thought that we were going to have to call the hospital. My mother said no hospital. And then we finally got them back to the apartment, which was another horrible, really frightening ordeal. And it was a little bit after that that I found an assisted living place that was closer to where I lived in Connecticut. And it was just so intense because they'd lived in that apartment. I'm trying to think, that must have been around 2007. And they moved in 1959.
Yeah, so
to that apartment. And they never, you know, it was just almost 50 years. And they packed a little overnight bag, and my mother said, this is just going to be a trial stay. And I think that they knew that they were not going to come back.
Mm.
And they pretty much walked out of the apartment and never saw it again.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
I was struck by so many moments in this memoir. One of them, when you bring your father home to Connecticut while your mother was recovering in the hospital, you write, any Florence Nightingale-type visions I ever had of myself, an unselfish, patient, sweet, caring child who happily tended to her parents in their old age, were destroyed within an hour or so. My father's approaching senility pushed me to my limit. I thought that was incredibly honest, and it must have been difficult of you for you to come to terms with that.
Oh, it's horrible. It's awful. I mean, there's still, you know, I just feel like in so many ways I fell short, you know.
Mm.
I wanted to be a better person. I wanted to be a more patient person. I wanted to be better at it than I was.
Yeah.
But it was really, really hard.
Yeah. And give us an idea why, what was going on with your father by then? I mean, he's falling pretty deeply into sort of moments of dementia.
Yeah. Well, when my mother was in the hospital in Brooklyn for 2 weeks, my father could not be left to stay in the apartment by himself. And we took him back up to Connecticut to live with us. And, I've heard and read a little bit more about this, that sometimes when somebody has senile dementia, when they're in their sort of familiar surroundings and with their beloved who maybe takes care of them a little bit, many of these symptoms can sort of be masked to a certain extent. But when he came up to Connecticut, he was so disoriented. It was so heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
he would say things like, where do I live? Why am I here? And then the worst was like, where's Elizabeth?
Right. Your mother.
My
right.
mother. My yeah. mother. And I would have to tell him, you know, why she wasn't there. And he would be surprised over and over again. And then he would like, then it would start to, he'd start to remember what had happened. And he'd, you know, say, yes, okay, calm down. You know, how much longer? And, you know, at that point, we weren't really sure, you know, calm down. And then like a few hours later, it would start up again. It was really very challenging and very, very sad. And sometimes kind of funny. I mean, you know, taking him shopping was really interesting because it had been, well, his clothes were pretty much tatters because they lived deep, deep, deep in Brooklyn. It was not like there were clothing stores around them. And they just had, their clothes were kind of almost like rags. And, you know, at this point, he's like 94 around, 93, 94. And I took him to, so he hadn't been clothes shopping in a long time. I took him to a place, a big sort of discounty clothing store that has, you know, huge selection of everything, underwear and socks and ties. And he hadn't seen the new types of underwear ads ever. Mm. And so in the men's department is this big 3x4 photo of a man wearing briefs and no shirt. And he has a hairless chest. And my father just does this double take. And he goes, what? I don't understand that. And I said, what, Dad? And he goes, it looks like that man has breasts. And it was because, you know, the guy had the giant pecs.
Right.
And this was just so foreign to him. You know, the waxed chest with the pecs and probably the shirtlessness itself, you know.
Yeah.
It was something.
You know, given this experience and watching your parents decline, you came away with some pretty strong views about the push for, not immortality, but the push and the desire to live extended lives, to live until you're 110 or 114. Not such a good idea.
Well, I think that if I had not gone through this experience, I might have thought, huh, let's look into that. But, I mean, aside from the economic complications of that, my guess is that between 98 and 114, those are not going to be great years. People can live a long time if nothing goes hideously wrong, but the way that the quality of life is so compromised, I mean, I don't know, because I'm saying this from my perspective, and maybe when you are 98, if you're lying in a bed and you're totally incontinent, and you are not getting out of that bed, and you don't eat anymore, you just drink Ensure, maybe that's fine.
I have, our time is running short. Have you had the conversation with your children?
I have not.
Hmm.
It's a hard conversation to have, and I guess I don't feel like it's quite necessary yet.
Hmm.
But I probably should.
Hmm. On the other hand, you might be tempted to say, can't we talk about something more pleasant?
Yeah, and then my kids will go,
Roz Chast is an illustrator and cartoonist whose work has appeared in The New Yorker since 1978. She spoke to us last spring about her new memoir, Can't We Talk About Something More Pleasant, which recently won the New England Book Award for Nonfiction. There's a lot more information at radioboston.org.
Well, stay with us, because coming up, we'll talk to Dunkin' Brands CEO Nigel Travis about the company's attempted move to the West Coast. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.